And gentlemen, if you'll just give them a brief introduction of yourselves and what brings you to this topic.
Good afternoon. My name is Pablo Rodriguez. Actually, can you guys hear me? I may not need the microphone. I'm the director of the Dolores Huerta Community Organizing Institute. I was, for the most part, raised in San Joaquin Valley, maybe 8 hours north of here. I was born in Ciudad Juarez. And my family traveled from Juarez to Nuevo Mexico to Los Angeles and up north. And what brings me to this work is the understanding that was passed on from my grandfather, that essentially decisions are made by those who show up. So wherever it is that we chose to be as a family, we needed to participate. So that's the shortest version that you'll ever hear of my biography. For the sake of this, for this workshop or this presentation, we have three learning objectives: to identify the relationship between community organizing and the occupational safety and health of Spanish-speaking agricultural workers in California, define three major challenges to this type of organizing in the past, and describe three important strategies for moving this work forward in the decade to come. What I'm actually going to do, as I have this slide on, is start with a story. The Dolores Huerta Foundation, we are only 3 years old. What we do is that we build neighborhood committees, or comités de vecinos. They have three goals: to identify issues in their neighborhood, to move people to action to resolve them, and to disseminate information. There was one group of about 10 working women in Weed Patch. For those of you that are familiar with the Grapes of Wrath, this is the same place. Weed Patch Camp that John Steinbeck talks about is the very same place that we're working in. So what this group of people did was form a neighborhood committee. And we worked with them to identify, we went through the SWOT analysis of what the most pressing issues for the neighborhood was. And for them, it was curbs, gutters, and 15 streetlights that had not been working as long as anybody could remember. Within a couple of months, after some work, they were able to work with the County Board of Supervisor, Michael Rubio, and PG&E, and they were able to fix the 15 streetlights. The thing that's important about this moment is that the world opens up to this group of people, to these workers, right, to these women, because the next thing that happens is that they decide, well, that wasn't that bad. What else can we do? So the very next thing that they decided to do ends up in a victory of passing a $5 million bond measure that builds a new gymnasium, builds this, puts water filters in two of their schools, and so then suddenly they're participating in the process that they hadn't been a part of before. So what do they do next? Remember, this group, I should have said, gets formed in May of 2007. This is a little bit more than maybe 15 months ago, 16 months ago. So they've fixed the 15 streetlights. They've passed a $5 million bond measure, right? So they convinced a bunch of people to raise their taxes. In Kern County, mind you, okay? And so then the next thing to decide is that we have been participating and going to the school board meetings, three different school districts, and I think that we can do a good job there too. So now, four of those 10 women are running for school board. And next Tuesday, we will find out how they do. And the reason that I tell you this story is that I will go over it in the presentation, but essentially what you just saw me talk about is that we're working as the Dolores Huerta Foundation to transform people to become leaders by connecting them with their power. The very moment that they were able to get the streetlights fixed, they knew that they could actually do something, right? They made real and tangible improvements in people's lives. The school gymnasium will be finished by spring. They can walk down the street and to the store and feel safe. Their kids can play out into the street. So when it comes to public safety and public health, they now actually have a place to be able to do this. They alter the relations of power. The school, the supervisor did not necessarily take them seriously the first time they asked for the meeting, much less the school board, who told them that they obviously didn't understand what they were doing in Kern County wanting to raise people's taxes. They, however, didn't listen. Right, because they understood, again, the translation to our three core competencies are that decisions are made by those who show up. So we need to put this in context. When we're talking about organizations, we need to identify where it is that we fit as community-based organizations. I think that sometimes we make a mistake as organizations to believe that we can do everything that is on this list, that can go from direct service to direct action. Some of this language will be familiar for you because it's been used on the presidential campaign trail, right? So if you've heard Michelle Obama, she gave a speech at the Democratic Convention where she talked about the world as it is and the world as it should be. It's the same language that we use. Indirect services, everything that's from education to the left, it essentially talks about the world as it is. It accepts the relations of power, those that have power, and it addresses problems that the individual need. This is where we see programs, right? Self-help or an attorney, legal aid, that you actually go and ask for help on a one-on-one basis. You have paperwork to fill out some type of application. If you go education to the right on the spectrum, towards advocacy and direct action, we seek to create the world as it should be. And the translation is that this is where the idealists live, right? We alter the relations of power. We address community needs. And the only thing that you need to participate within the Dolores Huerta Foundation is ganas. That is to say, desire. There's no application process to be able to work with us. So that was actually quite unintentional. It's not supposed to be that big, but let me go to the next slide. Roberto will be able to talk more about some of the challenges that we have. And in this model that you see here is the leadership development model that we have. The three intersecting circles are strategies that we use that I'll actually talk about more towards the end of the presentation. What I want to bring your attention to right now is that it is not an accident that we have four steps to this cycle. For those of you that are familiar with Paulo Freire, that talks about popular education, he says in regards to praxis, that without reflection there could be no action. So that's what you see at the top of the cycle. There has to be reflection as the world as it is. However, for community organizing, you cannot have any action without responsibility. Because if you actually do some work for the people, they will view you as a charity. It is our work as organizers to have people connect with their responsibility. And the way that we do that is to connect in regards to their vested interest in their lives and their family. You notice that we don't have anything here that says that this is the good for the community, because that's not what will be sustainable. From there, again, referring back to the example that we gave from Weed Patch, they reflect it as the world as it is. I live on a street that doesn't have 15 streetlights. What is our responsibility? What can I do to create the world as it should be? They planned, they identified who it was that they needed to speak to, and they took action. And this is where we saw leaders identify. When we're talking about working with agricultural workers, I see it too often that community-based organizations, the very first people that show up to a meeting are identified as leaders without them having ever proven themselves, without actually the organizers being able to even identify or talk, what are the things that move them? So the fourth step is very important, and we need patience even to get to this point. And it leads us right back to reflection. What is it that we can do next? Well, let's pass a $5 million bond measure. They didn't know it was going to cost $5 million. They just knew that they needed a gymnasium that had never been built in the history of this school. Since the very beginning in the 30s when it was constructed, nobody ever decided, for whatever reason, to build a gymnasium for these students. I would venture to say it's because it was a bunch of poor, working class folks, Okies, Arkies, people that came from Texas during the Dust Bowl. And the only difference between those workers then and today is the language that they speak, because the work continues to be the same. And as Yolanda was talking about, systematically we have made these workers be invisible or clandestine. The laws are not there necessarily to protect them. The work is fine. It's the abuse that it is that we have to change. The work is hard. It's honorable work. It's the abuse that needs to change. So how do we frame this conversation? We hear it in conversations and when we come to conferences like this, that we need to empower people. But nobody, and it would frustrate me because nobody explained to me ever, like, what does empowering mean and how do I get from A to B or A to Z? Well, this is it. If you want to write it down, or if you feel like I'm skipping over something and I'm going over too fast, it's because I am. And be more than happy to speak with you on a one-on-one basis following the presentation. But essentially, it's this. If I could show anything that's more important than anything that somebody does, is the common ground. The world as it is. Connect with people through common experiences, values, and goals. When we talk about sustainability within organizations, we spend often too much time talking about the organizational history of the story of the organization, victories that we have, and what it is our plan to win. But we fail to connect on what it is that drives people. There's a Quiche Maya word for work called meña that says translated into Spanish is creer, crear y hacer con amor y dolor. That is to believe, to create, and to do with love and pain. There is balance in that. And there has to be balance in everything that it is that we do as organizers. So we start there with people's vested interests. And that's when we have to listen. And I'll repeat that. We run into people so often that are just waiting for their opportunity to talk, to show us how smart they are, that we fail to listen as organizers because we have all of the answers. And this is the part where I've enjoyed working with Zoe Clayson and Roberto Garcia from Abundancia Consulting, because we talk about that. So these are the moments that we need a little bit more kindergarten and a little less college. We need to learn how to play with each other in the play box, right, in the sandbox, to be able to understand what it is that drives us. So the reason that this is a funnel is because we can actually start anywhere here, and it's not linear. But it is, in fact, a funnel, because as we tell the story of the foundation and how it was founded and why it was founded, decisions are made by those who show up. The victories that we've had, like the ones that I actually just mentioned to you with the streetlights and the gymnasium, and there's a lot more to that. And we talk about what the plan is to win. The plan to win is that we organize more committees to be able to participate, to run more people for elected office and appointed positions, to be able to be the ones that make decisions about our communities. That leads to the ask. I need you to organize your own meeting. I need you to fight for your family. Do you believe in fighting for your family? Yes, because I already know that you talked to me about this. Whoa, I'm sorry. So we're running short on time. And what I'm going to do is throw to my partner, Roberto Garcia, to be able to talk about some of the challenges that we have in talking about this and framing some of this work.
So really quick, the 30-second piece on me. Like many of you, the advocacy part in my heart, it was driven just by that, through my heart. It's interesting, I have an interesting dynamic here. Actually, I used to work for Pablo. He was my supervisor for LUPE, La Unión del Pueblo Entero. That's part of the United Farm Worker arm for community organizing. So I was formally trained as an organizer by Pablo, my former employer. And I have my current employer who formally trained me as an evaluator within public health, who's here as well. So the post and the pre and past here, so it's kind of interesting. So with that said, I want to pose a quick question. This is more maybe philosophical than evaluation, but you know, how would many of you look at this glass in today's world, socioeconomic, political environments? Would you say that the glass is half empty or half full? Some of you would say maybe half full. You know, if we were to do random sample, maybe half empty, but then Pablo would say, well, the glass is the wrong size. That's the kind of people that I associate myself with, you know. So I'd like to further anchor, this presentation by continuing with the lessons learned and really highlighting the reality of this work, like Pablo was saying. So I'm going to highlight some inherent tensions around grassroots community work. The two that I like to highlight are language and competition. So I'd like to pose a quick question to the audience to get the glucose to the brain. The assets, capital, and deficits, you know, what comes to your mind, and again, I'll even pose this to the panel up here, excluding Pablo because, you know, you can't cheat, but assets, capital, and deficits, what comes to your mind when you see these terms?
Capitalism,
okay, very good. Anyone else? What are they usually associated with?
Money,
you know, account. The first time I saw this, well, first of all, the context of which I saw this in was within a health promotion strategy, you know, different types of initiatives, public health initiatives, and I thought, boy, maybe we're going to have a meeting with Charles Schwab, Merrill Lynch, or maybe AIG. Maybe we can exclude AIG at this point. But they're usually associated with strength-based or asset-based approaches. Nonetheless, this is not community language, especially if you're working in the Latino, rural communities or the farmworking communities. Part of this idea is that translation without interpretation can lead to miscommunication, especially if we use words like asset, which if you translate that to Spanish becomes un bien. So if you go to some farm worker just recently coming from Latin America and you say, well, I'd like to know about your bienes, they'll probably look at you very strangely and run the other way thinking you're an ICE agent. So things to be very careful about. So we need to be cautious and cognizant of the embedded meanings, nuances in dialects. And to highlight that point, if we just take a look at the indigenous population here in the United States, and even if we go back a little bit to the Mexican state of Oaxaca, we have 16 primary languages spoken with a variety of dialects that phonetically, when you hear them, don't resemble Spanish at all. Rather, people say that they sound more like Chinese or even Hmong. So how do we get our message across? It may not be a word. It might be a phrase. It might be a visual image or a graphic. So things to consider. continuing with our examples of these tensions, the one I'd like to highlight now deal with competition, especially around economic and political interests. There's this myth of objectivity with organizations around health and safety. If we just somehow organize these different experts, these different sectors within a county or community, and put them in a room, and we then mobilize community residents and put them again in a room, that they can then solve the issues and come together with a plan and maybe walk off into the sunset. There is a political process, though, here. It's true that the appeal of mobilization is just that. It's very appealing to many people as a method. You know, if we discuss, you know, within the foundation world, within the elite and government world, they like to throw around, well, let's just mobilize our assets, without really taking into consideration that, although it comes across as very neutral and benign, it quickly takes us down a political and economic interests that aren't always displayed in public arenas. There's that old saying, how's it go? The two things people don't want to see is making sausage and policy. Perfect. Y'all get an A for that one. I'd like to also pose a question, and again, Pablo can probably touch on this, but, you know, can we truly find common cause between growers and workers in today's environment? Especially in a lot of these very, very conservative, reactionary counties. That's some of the struggle that continues within advocacy work within public health, and something that Pablo is an expert at, along with the Dolores Huerta Foundation, definitely introducing people to their power and creating systems change and what that truly means, along with policy change. Now, as far as assumptions, I think one thing that we need to be aware of is, the one thing I wanted to highlight in this slide is cultural awareness, cultural competency, and cultural humility. 5 minutes, I see you. Okay, I'll make this quick. Literacy and knowledge are not the same thing. We should never use literacy as a standard to measure someone's intelligence, especially in these rural Latino communities. There's so much more that can be offered. And this is my last slide before I hand it back to Pablo. Immigration, Eurocentric model, and empowerment. Again, I want to ground some of the work that we're doing as evaluators. Immigration, something that you will undoubtedly see and encounter, as this poses a real fear in a lot of the informal and formal networks in these societies, in these counties. The Eurocentric model really is fostering a lot of misunderstanding and confusion within Latin America. Again, Europe, Latin America, two different things that really, when people are trying to implement these assets in social capital and things like that, it doesn't resonate, it doesn't connect. So we need to really think about the models that we're utilizing in these farm working communities. And lastly, empowerment. Here's a term that's been thrown all over the place. You know, let's empower people, let's build up their capacity, blah, blah, blah. But it truly doesn't reflect transference of those that have it and those that don't. So, Pablo, I think you have only 3 minutes, so.
So Roberto said it, right? We're leading right back to what it is that empowerment is. We have to listen to folks and really take into account what, again, the world as it is, and then talk about what it is that we have to do to get to the world as it should be. And it's rooted in responsibility. So what are the next 10 years? In the very one of my first slides, you noticed that I had three intersecting circles, and strategy 1, 2, and 3. I call them phase 1, 2, and 3. Is something that the Dolores Huerta Foundation is attempting. We understand that we're very ambitious to be able to want to integrate three different things that individual organizations have done in the past. But it leads to what Roberto said. And I like the fact that he actually called me out on it, that I do say that a lot. The glass is neither half empty nor half full. It's just the wrong size. So when we talk about communities like the Central Valley, the Yakima Valley in Washington, and just different agricultural regions, for example, or rural areas, the Imperial Valley here in Southern California, we understand that maybe some of the things have worked, but we also have to come and face the brutal facts that maybe some of the things have not worked, and we just need to change our approach. So it's all rooted, again, in community and leadership development, but knowing that we need to link with organizations that actually have an effect on local policy at a strategic level, and then identify beyond coalitions, but really have a substantial regional impact. I'm going to run through some of these two examples really quick of people that are doing this, I think, successfully. Paul English is here at this, if anybody knows Paul English. He's working with the Environmental Public Health Tracking Project of California. The point that I wanted to make in regards to this is that their logic model seems very similar to what it is that we do. They take information, that's the reflection, the world as it is. They reevaluate it, right? This is the responsibility. What is it that we need to do with it? The assessment is the stakeholders planning. What is it that we're going to do with it? And then the improved public health is the actual action. And the reason that this is important is because with changing technologies, health across borders, we see from this map that traditionally or historically, the way that we had viewed health information as was at the zip code level. But now, because of spatial mapping, we're able to see maps that are very specific. And for me as an organizer, I'm able to see and know that whoever are in living in those hotspots, there's a door that I need to knock on. So us approaching Paul, or Paul approaching us is which he actually did. Inviting us to participate in the process is all the difference and a challenge that we have in the next 10 years to be able to integrate those two types of things, public health systems at the state level and at the international level. And again, the current projects focus on health and environmental information, and we're talking about things like asthma, child lead poisoning, neurodevelopmental disorders, cancer, prostate, cervical, ovarian, and uterine. But future work will use similar approaches and incorporate variables such as economic and social issues. So this work for me is very exciting. And again, when we're taking into account in regards to land use, air quality, and the economy, going back and piggybacking off of Yolanda, this is the opportunity that we have to be able to link the people that have been historically made invisible or clandestine into becoming a part of the system. And we are also highlighting the Poder Popular project from the California Endowment, which was incredibly ambitious, figuring out the all the kinks in this thing. But we were talking about a healthy and safe workforce for agriculture. What role do we have with agribusiness is that we understand that we share the same future. We live in the same areas, we share the same future. So integrating grassroots and treetop organizing, and just to be clear about treetop organizing, grassroots is we're knocking on your door, treetop is we're going to your church where you're already assembled or another association where you're already gathered, and affecting policy and systems change through that process. And with that, I think that we made it, right? Thank you. Oh.
That was sneaky.